Certification, again, I made a simple link to get you to the about this exam. We're not going to spend as much time as we used to in the past. I used to spend, you know, 20 minutes talking about exam stuff. It's all on aka.ms/70-533. That second link, I will probably update that. That is the last Ignite. A lot of things have changed. That's why I said this has been updated. Particularly, we're now more in the ARM mode, right? Versus ASM, and hopefully you know what that is. If not, you will when I'm done. And the shortcuts in the IaaS op guides we talked about. I think I can use this thing, right? Q&A, quite honestly, I don't see a mic, and B, I don't have time for it. My idea here is to tell you what you need to know. If you have questions afterward, please come up, and I'll be glad to help you out. Oh, I like that better. So there is a roadmap to, I think I put the shortcut in the other thing. I made a shortcut for aka.ms/azure/mcsa is what this is. So if you have both good infrastructure skills, architecture, and developer, and take all three of these exams, you actually will get an MCP, MCSA on Azure. So that's pretty cool. It came out last year. Steady resources, this deck is about, in my opinion, I mean, just because I worked hard at it, is to give you pretty much everything you need. At the end of each section, I try to highlight 3 to 5 things. Again, if I can get you 3 to 5 questions, that's usually about the point where most people miss exams, about 3 to 5 questions. You really want to get hands-on. So this morning, I went in and I updated some things I hadn't dabbled with before. Media services, I don't do. Actually, I think I did it in the architecture one. I don't do media services. But now that it's in the new portal, you click on it, you can see everything in there. Look at all the options, click around. You don't have to be uber deep in these things, but you need to know what the heck it is, why would I care about using it, and what are the options that I can configure. If you get that much, you're probably 90% there, if not more. This exam is gonna dive into Azure command line. If you're like me, I'm a big PowerShell person. My new customer, they hate PowerShell. They do everything Azure command line. So guess what I'm doing now, Azure command line. So install it when you install the SDKs and everything else. Get your hands in there. There is an exam reference guide, which you can buy. I think they have a 20% discount here, but here's my tips. This is a new slide I made this week, actually this morning. I've been wanting to do this for a long time. I always give this spiel about how to prepare and get ready for an exam. So do I buy a book or not? In my opinion, everything that you need is out there on Azure.com. I've always said this back to NT4.0. It's on TechNet. What are these books doing? They're taking it. They're just redigesting it, right? It's all out there. So if you want to buy a book and like the paper, I get that. I scribble and highlight all over the place, too. But it's all out there on the web. And, of course, now if you've got a nice Surface tab and everything, you can put it in OneNote and copy and paste that stuff. So the caveat emptor about that I want to warn you about, caveat emptor, buyer beware about going to Azure.com, are these three things here. So let me highlight these. Yeah. Anything that's not in the exam objectives, you don't care about. So that link takes you there, and that's aka.ms/70-533. You don't want to fall into that stuff. Also, anything that says preview, real good chance that's not going to be in the exam. Right, preview or just went GA, that's going to take a few months to hit the exam. Or they're always evaluating, updating. But anything that's preview, you want to do that. Or ASM, so let me give you that overview really quick if you don't know. When Azure first came out, it was called Azure Service Manager, and that was based on XML. Now we're when you go in the new portal and it says, you have for Resource Manager or Classic means ASM. Resource Manager means ARM or Azure Resource Manager, which means everything's based on a JSON template. Anything and everything you make now, if you haven't seen this, you can export that template out, reuse it, tweak it. Whenever you say new something, there's always an ARM template with that too. So that's one of the directions they've made in the last 6 months. I think they did it this summer, where there's more ARM stuff on there. Okay. Here's another tip. When doing a prep exam, so they got the exams across the street there that you can take and walk through. Here's my strategy. May work for you, may not, but here's what I do. I pick a category that I think I'm weak in, like maybe PaaS. And I pick the PaaS section. I go, give me all the questions. I just jack up the number 120. It'll give me 50 questions. And I click end. And then I go through and I read why the answers were right and why the wrong answers were wrong. And that's what I study. That is exactly what I study. Now, here's a little bonus to you in this deck. So it's nothing that I'm stealing as confidential then, but I actually went through and grabbed their links in those practice exams, and I have them here. So you can just hit those links on my deck, right? I was going to say most of those links are on the deck on my website now, but I'll try to get this one uploaded by the end of today for you. I'll put it on my blog. Okay. Other things, so to get hands-on, if you don't have access, get a free trial account. It's super easy. Guess what? aka.ms/azure/free. That's my shortcut for there. Also, you can do the hands-on workshops. At the end of this deck, I listed out every Azure hands-on workshop you can do. There's a bunch. Microsoft Virtual Academy. A lot of us have been to Redmond. We've done recordings. A whole bunch of architects went out there about a year ago, and they did little sessions. And the only thing I'll warn you about that, they were done a year ago. We know what a year ago means in Azure. It's probably old. So some of it's pretty good, but you just got to be careful. Make sure you're in the ARM world. Next tip, when you take an exam, you cannot walk in with anything, but they give you a blank piece of paper. And before you click that start button, you can do a brain dump and put all your little stupid mnemonics and tricks. All people seem to know data processing. Y'all remember that one, right? OSI model layers you had to know for the network exam. Binary charts. Yes, I'm going to quiz you on binary. I'll teach you how to do binary in five fingers. Okay. Yeah, there's a chance you'll see some binary, believe it or not. So what you do is when you're studying, you make this little cheat sheet at home and you kind of learn it, memorize it, and then right before you click start, you jot down those little things that will help you remember, little stupid tricks. Okay. All right, so let's go through it. I'll watch my time here. So these are categorically the sections that we'll be looking at. Web apps, and everything's about 1/5. Virtual machines, cloud services, storage, Azure Active Directory, virtual networks, and web apps, if you didn't know, hadn't heard, used to be websites, right? That's the new name. A little bit about everything. All right, resource groups. So when we talk about ARM and Azure Resource Manager, first thing you gotta have is a resource group, right? This is how we organize things. I always use the example with my customers now. When you have a resource group, for those who are old school Active Directory like myself, right, we have organizational units. What do I use organizational units for? Delegation and group policy. Well, we don't have group policies in Azure, but we can't delegate. We have built-in roles. This is one thing I was thinking about, and I don't know how it's changed in the new exam, but I could see this as a type of question. If I'm a network admin and you want to give least amount of privileges for someone to control the resources, I think you'd want to use that built-in role for network resources. So a little tip, when you're in the portal and you're looking at a thing, go to, now here's, I got to talk to the resource people. I got to talk to the product group on this. Have you noticed this? That when, depending where you're at, the roles are different. Some places it's called users, some it's called IAM. Some actually still have the little head icon. If you go to subscriptions, that used to be there everywhere, and now it's not. They're not talking to each other. I'm going to smack them over the head over that. If you're listening, product group. But my point is, if you go to that thing like web apps, look and see, is there a web app role, right? There probably is. You should also know that if the rule doesn't work for you, for example, my current customer, they're doing dev test labs, really cool stuff. Dev test labs, there is no custom role. There's a couple custom roles, but it only works if someone else already made the dev test lab. My customer wanted a role to make dev test labs from scratch. So we went in with Azure CLI or PowerShell or REST API. By the way, everything ends up with REST API, right, that drives all this. And they were able to make a custom role. Resource groups can span, so if you got stuff in there in the resource group, you put Azure resources, can span the regions. Nesting is not supported. I've brought this up, just a real world tip. For those of you that are in Azure advisors, there's a resource group section in there, and I've posted a post in there just last week. I want to be able to nest resource groups, but you cannot do that right now, so you need to know that for the exam. Cannot do that yet, but I haven't got any word. If you tell them, the more people we get to scream and shout, I went to a 5,000 user group at Microsoft, and I go, let them know, because large global companies want this to distribute out their control of RBAC. I think it's very powerful. So let them know. It's your job. They'll listen to you before they listen to me, the more customers they say. All this stuff is pushed out through ARM templates. repeatable, consistent patterns. They're JSON. JSON is JavaScript object notation. It's pretty human readable. And of course, I have a shortcut for everything you want to know, akia.ms/azure/arm. Implementing web apps. So these are the kind of the things you need to know. And notice I actually highlighted from the portal there the different types of support we have for .NET, PHP, Node.js, Python, Java, and of course the marketplace app. And I got a website for that. That was the beach picture there. So deploying web apps, I actually added this because I think it's something that you'll probably want to take a look at. There are web apps, and then there's the app service. And I don't know if I have this picture in this one or the next session. But when you look at app services, there are different things you can do within it. They usually show this little box. You can do logic apps, web apps, API, functions, right? All those things are part of the app services. But then there's web apps, but you can't do that without the service. And then there's a larger container, which gives you kind of your own private instance called ASE, Application Service Environment. So you should know about the differences, particularly when you go from app services to app service environment. It's a pretty big paradigm shift in the fact that the big difference is if you're doing app services, you are in a pure multi-tenant world, right? You're in with everyone else sharing these resources. When you go app services, this is why it takes 2 to 3 hours. It puts it in your own VNet, which real world, that's a good thing, right? It's probably what you want to do. So take a look at that. They all run unmanaged VMs. Of course, most of the stuff, is all unmanaged VMs. And this is really kind of more of an architectural point, but knowing the difference between app services versus service fabric, about how they run unmanaged VMs, there's some differences there we'll talk about in the next session. Pricing tiers, you should know those. There's 4 tiers. And this is the first time I did Azure, this kind of confused me because if you're in a VM, you'll have 2 tiers. Well, those are pricing tiers for the VMs, but if you're in web apps, you have different types of tiers. It's not based on the VM. It's based on this PaaS service. So free, shared, standard, basic. Generally, all the goodness that you get with things is standard. So generally, if they're saying, what level do you need to be? Standard's kind of a good guess because it gets you lots of things like availability sets that we'll talk about, load balancing, things like that. No slots. So there are these things called deployment slots. Anyone dealt with deployment slots? Seen those? Know what they are? So really cool stuff. You could have a deployment slot for dev test, right? And then when it's ready, you actually swap the slot and make that dev environment go into production. So if I have a basic, I cannot do that. So I got to move up to, I think actually to standard on that. Okay. And that's actually showing, so I try to do pictures of the new portal, so you actually see, when I go to basic, there's no slots, but standard, I get up to 5, and premium, I get up to 20. We get traffic manager, right, when we go from standard to premium. We get more scalability, so I don't need to know, I don't want to worry about detailed numbers on these things, but kind of categorically, where do I get traffic manager, where do I get slots, that sort of stuff. Okay. Also, when you are scaling this, different methods that you can do this by. So again, looking in the interface, so I can scale these VMs by an instance count, by CPU percentage, or by schedule and performance rules, and then I can change up the number of instances I want to use as well. Okay. Different methods to deploy web apps. We have 3 different methods we're going to look at. One is we use Cloud Sync. So my current customers doing this are looking at Kudu for deployment. It's a deployment engine. And then you can select different options like OneDrive or Dropbox as the deployment source. Continuous deployment, this is really popular with web apps and app services, using GitHub, Bitbucket, VSTS. So it's a continual process. And then the third option is you could actually do a local Git deployment. So if I'm a developer and I have my own workstation, I can actually do this here. On this particular one, I'm not going to read through all this, but this is a very typical exam type thing where they'll say, okay, we might do a local deployment. What are the steps? And put them in the right order. So you have to drag and drop these things in the exam. Very typical type of question they do. So again, you can read through that later on. Check my time. So we saw that, the deployment slots need standard or premium. You get staging. We talked about swapping deployment source from the cloud folder or Azure App Service uses Kudu. Web jobs you can upload with Git or FTP. If you do FTP, you actually put in the password in the portal to secure that. And I actually made this grid the last time I did this internally. Again, some things that are that you get or don't get with swapping the slots. So what I'd focus on, that's why I kind of highlighted these things in red. So all the things that are swapped, that's nice, but what I really kind of care about from an exam perspective of what things are not swapped, my custom domains, SSLs and bindings, and scale settings. So those are some big ones to know about. Configuring the general settings, we talked about the frameworks. We have that picture. That's actually an old picture, but and I had it in the first one. Also for web apps, free or shared, 32-bit, basic or standard, you get 64-bit. You got diagnostics, logs. And again, all the logs and things, if you get in the interface and see it, you can see the options that you can configure in there and how they're saved and different types of trace logs. And there's a picture of it right there to show you in the new portal what all you get. So another little tip when you're going, when you get this deck and you go through it, make sure you go through in full screen. Otherwise, the pictures will block a lot of the stuff that's there. So you can see these different options for diagnostics logs. Okay. SSL, again, basic or standard mode, you have to upload your certs. If you upload your certs, it has to be in a PFX format, right, to get the private key. Different monitoring options, again, in basic or standard. And you can have HTTPS endpoints up to 3 geo-distributed locations. Okay. This is a new slide I put in last time, just showing because there's a lot of exam questions that we'll talk about PowerShell. So PowerShell, it's, you know, it's just verb, noun. So you don't need to learn all the things. But what I tell people, if there's a noun or a verb that doesn't make sense, that's what I'd focus on. Otherwise, a lot of PowerShell stuff is pretty self-explanatory, right? You have to do something. Okay, I look for that verb. I look for the matching noun that goes with it. But I actually have a link at the bottom of that also for all the Azure website, or I should say web app commandlets as well. Here's some example if you've never dealt with Azure CLI. So it works a little bit differently in that with Azure CLI, you don't have the dashes. You know, it's pretty much just space, command, space, noun, like that. So you can actually, you know, list them out in the app. XPLAT is called a cross-platform CLI. That's what they call it, XPLAT. And you Azure space site space H, or dash H, and you can actually get a help file on there. And again, link down there so you can look at more of those. So you should be familiar with some command line options and how command line works if you haven't. Play around with it. It's actually pretty easy. So these are just some questions I put in here, and again, I don't want to take the time because I will fill up the time, but you can kind of test yourself later on with these questions about things to know about web apps, how to run web jobs. The connection strings I didn't highlight, it was in my kind of hidden notes, but if you're doing connection strings, if you use .NET, it uses construct connection strings, everything else will use environment variables. And we talked about the scales and the hosting plans, free, shared, basic, and standard. And that's that. You know, there's something interesting though. It just kind of hit me. So I think I may actually stand correct on this because when we had the picture, you notice in the host plan it didn't have 4. I think the shared is out in ARM. The 4 was in ASM. So I think I'm going to go with that. It's just free, basic, and standard. So shared was in ASM. I need to update that. Pretty duck picture. These are the categories for implementing virtual machines. aka.ms/azure/vm, get you all kind of stuff on there. That compare link is really good. I actually have that picture in this or the next session, I forget which one, but they have a great chart that talks about doing web apps versus cloud services versus VMs, what are the pros, cons, and it's really the initial discussion I have when I walk into new customers. Do we want to do IaaS or PaaS, right? How much do you want to manage? How much do you want us to manage and control? Right, and how's that scale slide as we go from IaaS to PaaS and everything in between? All right, so different workloads that we can do when we push this stuff out. We want to use ARM templates. Right, got links in there. Have some sample PowerShell, again, just to show what some of the options are. And again, sample Azure CLI, SQL SharePoint. And really a good way to find out to look at options about what the workloads are, just go to the marketplace, right? So if you go to the marketplace or click the little plus, here's two free tips I bet you didn't know. Y'all, how many people have been in the new portal? Keep your hands up, How many of you have pressed B or N while doing that? Put your hands down. Yeah. Most people do it. B is browse, will open up a menu like when you add new things to your menu. N will take you to the marketplace directly. And it, actually, if you press a question mark, then you'll get the help bar on the right-hand side and see everything in the portal. Like, no one knows that. So, yeah, so that's a quick way to find what kind of workloads we support. So you just press N when you're in the new portal, and then you'll see in there, you know, the different types of stuff you can add in there. So this is a chart I've had, and again, this is a hard one to keep up to date. I got the link for this. So what do you need to know? Do I want to memorize all this stuff? I don't get that much brain space, but what I would say are categorically, if there's one area that I kind of want to focus on, it's kind of the odd exclusions. Come on, click. Like right here. So the A8 and A9s, the compute intensive, and these in particular get you the InfiniBand networking, right? So if that's a requirement, they'll give you a little scenario, blah, 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 blah. We need high network capabilities. So A8, A9 is going to be an option. And I actually did update a picture in here, not that one. One more. There we go. So that's what it looks like in the new portal. And again, looking at, and actually, even since I've done this, I did this in July internally. Now they have the F-series, right? It just keeps on changing and growing. So I don't know how they pick their letters, but they're all over the place. But the key thing from a real world, and both in this exam and the next one that is the gotcha, is a couple times I've like thrown a VM out there, and it was something like we're going to build a SQL Server in Azure, and then we wanted to have 5 disks. And I had a VM size that only supported, you know, 2 or 4 disks, right? So those are kind of real-world things you have to be aware of when you're doing this. Is it going to support auto-scale? Is it going to support premium disk support or not? Those are kind of categories. But do I want to know all the disk sizes? I don't know. I think from the exam point, I'm going to make a pretty good guess on this. They're probably looking at A-series, C-series, DE. That's primarily it, you know, I think. They might be talking about the DS series now, but click. All right, this is a new slide I did since the last Ignite, how to deploy and connect to Linux VM. I did not bring this up at the beginning of the session, but tomorrow, it's pretty new. I tell people to be kind. It's very, very new compared to this one. We actually are doing LFCS, Linux Foundation Certified System Administrator. Hey, I got 2 fists back there. So if you take and pass this exam, and you take and pass the LFCS, which is outside the whole Microsoft world, that tells you how much we're invested in Linux, they're bringing it here for that training, you actually will get an MCSA on Azure for Linux. So you have to take both of those. So this stuff I don't think would be on the LFCS exam, but I'm sure they'll cover it in here for this very reason. So I go to the portal, I add a Linux machine, if you've never done Linux before. It's a little bit, you know, a little more trick to getting it going, right? Do I have the right client to make the SSH connection? Do I got PuTTY? Do I got the public key? I have to create or select a resource group, which I gotta do that with anything. But this was just a great picture I found somewhere on the website that really kind of breaks down. And this picture is actually not just good for this, but it's kind of breaking down, whether you're looking back Windows or Linux, the big box, we have our resource group, then you have your virtual network, and within that you have your virtual machine, and then you have your disks, which we'll talk about how those work, what you get by default versus what you have to add. Do we have a public IP address? Are we gonna have a private IP address? Are we gonna use Azure DNS? Are we gonna do bring your own DNS? What kind of storage account with limitations? So this box conceptually is a lot of good stuff related to this exam, and we'll dive more into those as well. If you're going to do this, again, like my current customer that loves Linux and they have a lot of CLI stuff, you need to know how to get Azure CLI up and running. Well, you got to have the latest, greatest version. If you go to the Azure site, I think they have a downloads button up there, and that's where you get all the, you know, latest PowerShell, the latest CLI. There's a command to switch to the ARM mode. They have a quick test and setup. Also, a real-world tip, how many people have used Azure Quick Start Templates? Okay, oh wow, not many. So just do a search for Azure Quick Start Templates. There's a million templates out there, and half of them have been created by the product group. So for example, one that I was very excited about from my old world, I don't think they've done it yet, but they're working on it, is they're working on a template for ADFS and web application proxy deployment through an ARM template. Boom, in the cloud. Wouldn't that be nice? So if they don't do it, I will, but it's a matter of time and energy. But they told me that. They actually wrote a white paper on it. It's out there. Okay. Create and upload custom VHDs. I get in this discussion with a lot of customers. Should we do it or should we not? You can do it. I had a previous customer, it wasn't you guys, it was someone else way before, and it kept breaking. Like they were trying to upload, and they had so much security and network bandwidth issues that they just couldn't get it uploaded, right? So they kind of scratched it. And I said, well, here's what you do. If that doesn't work, you could always make a new VM, kill the VM, save the disk, right? And then configure your disk in there and then reuse that disk. That's another option. But you can upload it. You need to know these key points, though, if you do it. It's a good little exercise to do and try. You can make your own little box. If I'm a developer and I want to have Visual Studio and all my favorite tools and everything on there, I could do that, right? And actually, you can do the same sort of thing in Dev Test Labs, so you have a box with all my goodies built right into it. But in order to do this for uploading the Windows Server, I got to sysprep it. I got to do OOBE, right, out-of-box experience. I have to select Generalize. I have to select a storage account. Storage accounts have containers. Little real-world tip, possibly exam tip also. Containers is the only thing you still can't script with an ARM template, right? You can script the storage account, but the only way you can do it is the REST API to create a container. Okay. Then you upload it. You give it the source file. You put it in blob storage because that's where you're going to put all your VMs. And then you can add that to your custom list. Same thing for Linux. You got to have a resource group, got to have a storage account, got to have the access keys, upload the VHD to container. You can use either QEMU or KVM, and you have to convert. It is not, in either case, it is not VHDX support. They do not support that yet. It's VHD. So another option I've done, like I have a Hyper-V on my laptop. You got to save it as a VHD format, or else you have to convert it. And the same thing with Linux, I have to convert it. And we can do this all with ARM templates or by Azure CLI. Time check. Okay. We talked about disks. So by default, I make a new disk machine. I get an OS disk and a temp disk by default. The temp disk is really, really temporary. So you don't want to put anything on there. When you build a SQL Server, if I need a temp disk, I'm going to make a separate physical disk and add it to it. And actually, for the real-world folks, if you ever do a SQL in IaaS, there's very, very specific guidance about how to do that and make it work properly. If I log into that VM and look into Disk Manager, it's going to look just like, you know, real physical disk. It just shows itself just like it would on a virtual machine. Our next section, configuration management. So some of the things we can do, and again, categorically, I don't need to be an expert in these. I don't have to deep dive in DSC. Which if you don't know, DSC came out in Windows Server 2012. It was a kind of an updated, modified, enhanced, I won't say it's changed PowerShell, but it's kind of related to PowerShell. So it's desired state configuration. If you haven't seen Jeffrey Snover speak here, he's amazing. He's the guy who created PowerShell, and he's here at the conference, and he does a lot of talks. But he always says desired state configuration is, it avoids configuration drift. Right, you have a build, you want it to stay and maintain that exact same way. DSC will go, oh, that changed, okay, let's put it back, right? It's gotta go back. Prevents configuration drift. We also have third-party tools that have been out there probably longer, and there's a lot of reuse out there for Chef and Puppet. So again, don't need no details for this exam, just they exist, they do the same thing that I can do with DSC, just different tool. Chef uses recipes, there's a lot of recipes out there to do these various things. Also, in the picture here, you notice, and this is an old picture, but you actually can do this in the new portal as well. You probably want to have the VM agent to make these things happen, or you have to enable Chef or Puppet. You have to add these VM extensions. And yay, they finally put the VM extensions in the new portal, because just a few months ago, that wasn't there. You had to script it. But you can actually see all the VM extensions now for the ARM deployments in the new portal. And here's another little tip for doing the exam. You know, when you go into any window, and a lot of times there's that little blue eye thing, you know, highlight it, and it will, like, tell you about that thing. That's how you study for it, too. I passed, believe it or not, an IIS exam without ever reading a book, and I just installed it and looked at every help file and clicked at every option, and that's how I learned it. right? Just seeing how it is. That's what they want to know. Have you been there, done that? And if you haven't, fake it. All right, configuring VM networking. There are a lot of things, I think in the keynote they talked about some of these things. Great networking session. Lots of great networking sessions. There's more coming on Thursday and Friday. Yushan Wang and Nadirian, some really good stuff coming. You want to check those out. But we can do reserved IP addresses. Of course, the typical RFC 1918 address is 10.0, the 172.16.192.168. Each have multiple subnets, the smallest port subnet /29, which typically you use for an NVA, network virtual appliance, right? If you're gonna do it, that's a lot of times the recommendation, or /28. All right, here's your subnetting lesson. I used to teach 5 days on DNS and IP addressing. Believe it or not, in almost every Windows and every Azure exam, I've seen at least one question somewhere about this. Here's how it works. You have a network. You need to support 27 hosts. What will be the CIDR notation? All right, so if you know how an IP address works, part of it's network address, the rest of it's host address, right? How many bits in an IP address? Help me out. 32 bits, right? It's four octets, eight bits each, right? Okay, so here's the math. I taught my eight-year-old how to do this. So we need 27 networks, so each finger is a multiple of two. 2 × 2 = 4, 8, 16, 32. Oh yeah, 32 is bigger than 27, right? So I'm gonna borrow 5 host bits. So if I take 5 from 32, what do I got? 27, that's my CIDR notation. That's what I need, /27. Sorry that doesn't show in the video, but that's the way it works. Thing to know, I don't know that they'd catch you this in the exam, but definitely a real world, you better know. So the old formula was 2 to the n minus 2 to take away this network and all. How many do we take away in Azure? 5 total. Yeah, so whatever your number is, you take away 5. So it's those 2 plus 3 more on the top end. Yeah, so that could get you in the real world. So if you're doing a really tight network, you know. Network security groups. So we used to have in ASM, it was predominantly first ACLs, access control lists. We all know what those are, hopefully. But now we have NSGs, network security groups. And we have UDRs, which they actually called it what it is in the portal now. What's it called? Route tables. That's all it is. It's just a route table edition, right? You're modifying that. Know what these are and when and why I'd use them. And there's some specific things about them. An NSG, can I go inbound? Yes. Outbound? Yes. What about UDRs? Inbound? No. It's outbound only. UDR is outbound only. So think about it. Why would I do it? Typical use case, I want to point to an NVA, a virtual appliance. I got a Barracuda, some WAF out there, right? And I want to tell my traffic, you're going to that WAF, right? You got to go through that. You got to go through that F5 appliance, right? So you're forcing the traffic. There's a built-in table that basically says, within a VNet, guess what? Anyone can talk to anyone they want unless you control it, right? So UDRs is a route table, so that's only controlling by IP. And NSG controls port traffic, right? Flow in and out. And there's some basic settings in there. It's only TCP and UDP. Now, this is one I found, again, this summer. This was a new one I had never seen before. So probably both exam worthy and real world worthy. So there is a specific Microsoft IP address that's owned, 168.63.129.16. I don't have that memorized yet. I think it's used, I forgot what it's used for. It's used for probes, I think. And also a port 1688, which is reserved for key management services. So you have to make sure you don't block those out. Could be problematic. Load balancing endpoints. Again, this has been an evolving story. So here's an interesting thing. If you didn't know this or realize this, we have ILBs, and actually in the interface, I should update the picture. They changed it. So it used to be either internal load balancer or internet load balancer. But when you go in the interface now, you actually will see internal or public. So the way they work and are configured the same, the only difference is, do I have a public IP address reserved for it or not? That's the primary difference. It distributes based on source address protocol, source, destination, port. If you go to the networking talks, you hear about five tuple. That's your 5. right? That's how they do that. The endpoints are you can use for RDP, PS remote, SSH. Yeah, and there's that special address for the load balancer we talked about for the firewall policies. Here's one. They have this, and I of course, I couldn't tell you if I saw it or not, but I'll admit it. I didn't see it, but I don't know if you will. But it's on the exam objectives, this direct server return. And like I scratched my head for the longest time, and I couldn't find it. And then I was going through a template, and I found it. All I know is, when and why would I care about this and use this? SQL AOA. So in SQL AOA, there's actually a little box there. It says, do you want to use direct server return? And all I know and care about is it mitigates load balancer bottlenecks. But there's a PowerShell. You can do that enable direct server return option also, but it's used for SQL AOA. Same thing with keep alive. So these are other options to keep the connection from your client to your load balance opening during a long request. Okay. Availability sets, pretty important concept. So the idea here is, and actually, by the way, there's some really cool stuff in storage coming out related to this. So availability sets, so imagine I got a rack here and I got a rack over here, physical racks, right? We don't want that to go, we don't want our VMs to go down. We got a couple of web servers. I don't want both web servers in one rack and the rack dies and I lose my whole web farm. So we create an availability set, and what the availability set does is we're going to distribute those VMs across fault domains and update domains. So you need to know what those are, and I got actually a picture in the next one, I'll steal the thunder. But a fault domain is the rack died, right? So if that rack died, my other VM is on the other rack and we're still good. The update domain is not inside the box, not inside Windows operating system update, but as you're updating. If you ever get those emails, we're going to update the services and you want to make sure you have an availability set and update. So in the event that we update per update domain. So if you create an availability set and put a bunch of servers in there, you're pretty good. And that also buys you, the most important thing is an SLA. So if you put your servers in an availability set, and you typically do this by tiers, web tier, middle tier, back end tier, make an availability set for that. You get a 99.9% SLA with that, or 99.95, sorry about that. And I've got a link there that takes you right to it about the stuff. And then, of course, the picture about the options. And they actually changed this in ASM. It used to only be two fault domains. Now it's three. You go up to 20 update domains as well. And this is the picture kind of showing the availability set spanning across the rack about how that works. So yeah, and again, that should be a minimum of three fault domains. Yeah. Anything else there? So you get a default of five, going to go up to 20, and only one of those is rebooted at a time. Helps preserve the integrity of your machines. Implementing storage, configuring disk caching. So just a couple of key concepts to note here. We'll highlight these and blow it up for you. So we have host caching that you can set. Host caching is off by default for read-write and data disk, and it's on by default for OS disks. And there's a couple PowerShell options to how to do that. If you didn't know this, I'm sure you probably heard this in some of the talks. By disk by default, we get redundancy options. You should know about and be familiar with things like LRS, GRS, RAGRS, and how those work. If we do LRS, which is non-geographic, we get three copies by default. If we do geographic, it goes across two geographic regions, and we get six copies of those. It's at another site greater than 400 miles away. And those are the three options. And it's interesting, too, and I've noticed this. So actually, in this picture, it shows. But I've been in some areas, and I haven't figured out what the criteria, but sometimes you don't see ZRS. It's not available. Generally, and actually everything's defaults now to RAGRS in the new portal. So make sure you be careful. And also, notice once selected, can't change. Here's another exam tip to know about also. If you're going to do RAID disks and SPAN disks, it has to be LRS. It won't be supported or work across GRS. So, and also, I just did a mapping for my current customer. They wanted a map of storage account planning. So one of the strategies we had is, so when you think about your storage accounts for disks, so you can have non-premium and then a premium, because your storage account is for the entire, so it's premium for the entire storage account, right? And then we also had a separate one for LRS, because they're going to have some machines that are going to have Stripe disks. And then there's a whole nother topic. I don't think this will be in the exam yet, but they're talking about cool storage. Have you guys heard about that? So that's some pretty, so it's offline cheaper storage, and that would require a whole different type of thing. Storage count. Monitoring, endpoint monitoring, there's all kind of metrics you can gather every hour or minute, and you can see these in the portal, different types of alerts you can do, and I'm going to highlight the help file you can take a look at. You pick the metric, conditions, thresholds. It's like perfmon, right? Just like your old perfmon stuff you can do. You can also configure diagnostics, get in there, get in the portal, look at the monitoring, look at the diagnostics, and see what you can do there. And some pictures there. These are, I need to update those. Oh, there we go. There's a new one. So yeah, when I show you these pictures, these are default settings also, which is always good, I try to do. So I didn't configure or change anything. That's what you're getting out of the box. Okay. And we'll save those for you for things you need to know, which we just talked about. That's your personal quiz. There's Mount Haleakala. They blow the conch shell, welcome you in the morning. We got there, like we rode our, you know, the bus takes you up like at 2 in the morning, and the sun came, and you couldn't even see, the clouds were everywhere. You couldn't even see your face. It was, and that broke through at the last minute. So things about cloud services, configure, deploy, manage, monitoring. And this part's getting kind of smaller. I mean, you know, when you think of cloud service, you kind of think of traditional in the old ASM model. Like when we used to deploy a VM and it would be in a cloud service and it's kind of in its own container. But once we got to ARM, we've separated out all those bits and pieces, the network card, the public IP address, everything is entirely separated. So now when we talk about cloud services, we're really kind of talking more in the old world. But as we get in the conversation in the architecture design exam, it's more about PaaS, which kind of spans, it's kind of like replace the cloud service. But I don't really call that cloud services. I call it more PaaS. Because in this section of the exam, when they're talking about cloud services, they're really talking more like ASM type stuff, just for FYI. Okay. All right, so again, that's an old picture in there. So we can select instance count and size, your OS version and family, different types of roles. You should know the difference. I would highlight this one and mark it for your memory banks. The difference between a web role and a worker role. So when you think web role, gee, it sounds like an IIS server. Yep, so it's instances of those spun up. Worker roles can spin up processes. Now, the interesting thing, you go in the portal and try to find this, you're not going to see it. You'd have to go in Visual Studio and create a worker role, right, and then it will surface itself, okay? Other things we can do, and again, this is kind of bleeding over in the newer world, we can configure multiple web apps within an app service. We can have multiple app services within an app service environment. So again, this is getting familiar with those different worlds and environments. Almost everything, whether it's a blob, it's a VM, it's a cloud service, it's a PaaS service, you can make custom DNS names. If you've never done that, I'd recommend to try it. Get a trial subscription, buy a cheap domain name when they're on sale for a couple bucks, and do it. It's not that hard. So you should know about the process kind of step by step. That's kind of a category type things to know. If you do, it's like an auto scale for this cloud services. You can have manual or automatic. Can we do it by CPU, disk, or network load? And other types of metrics like queues or CPU or whatever. Lots of different ways you can configure that. Okay. Before you do cloud services, to make this work, you need to have the Azure SDK. You got to download that. And we talked about the certificate requires a PFX file. And we used to talk about diamond slides back in the old MCT days when we deliver, and this should be a diamond slide. So the diamond slide means this is really important stuff that's probably going to buy you a buck or two, things you need to know. So if I was going to do this in cloud services, you should be familiar with these terms, just kind of categorically what they are and when I would use them. So you have a service definition file and a service configuration file. And the file extensions kind of match it. So it's csdef for definition and csconfig for the configuration. So each of them contain different parts, and then they're all bundled up in a service package.cspkg, which you can use a CSPAC utility, which comes with the Azure SDK to deploy that. Monitoring cloud services, so in order to do that, you can create a storage account, enable diagnostics on there, get telemetry information, And I got a good link on that for you too. That's an old picture, so I would look at it in the new portal. In the new portal, you can actually collect, you can actually add in the old stuff too. So you can add in VMs in the classic mode and see those metrics that you can do there as well. Okay. All right, so that's review for you later on. Five things that we can do with the web role, deploying, worker role, diagnostics, and service bus. Where's that? Oh, that's Waikiki Beach. Implementing storage. So these are the topics in here, blobs and Azure files, managing access, diagnostics, implementing SQL databases, and recovery services. Time check here. Okay, 16 minutes. All right, so blobs. You should be familiar with blobs, what they are. They are REST-based interface. We have block blobs and page blobs. So no one understands the difference between those. So if we're talking about disks, we're talking about page blobs. Be familiar with this utility if you've never seen it or used it before. It's pretty nifty. So we talked about uploading custom VHDs. This is one of the ways you can do it, right? There's also another one, Windows Storage Explorer, which is pretty cool. It's kind of a nice little utility to upload images that you can do. Azure Files. So this one's pretty straightforward when you think about it. Think about like a network share. I got a bunch of VMs and I want to share some stuff between them. I can make an Azure file. And the one thing that it does that the other constructs within storage accounts do not do is it supports SMB. And just recently they upped it because it used to only support SMB 2.0 and now it supports whatever the latest version of 3 or 3.1, I forget what the number is. There was a talk on this. So this is one of the things I was mentioning earlier that I wanted to tell you about. And this stuff I'm going to tell you right now is not an exam. This is just good real-world stuff. There's going to be a talk on Thursday about disks and files you want to see. And they're going to talk about managed disks. So it's going to be a new premium SKU. I'm not sure if it's going to preview, public preview, what the status is. But essentially, no more storage accounts. Storage accounts will still be there, but you can get this premium option. And now you actually will see a disk object. So it's a one-to-one mapping. So it's really, really cool. So from an Azure design exam and real world, here's a thing to know about, because it's happened on very few occasions, but this is why they went this direction, is that when we talk about availability sets, right, you have a VM going from one to another. Well, imagine if they both are sharing the same storage account and the storage account fails. You just lost both nodes, right? So this is why they're going to the managed disks. And I saw some of the preliminary pricing. It looked really cheap. You know, if you got thousands of machines, I'm sure it adds up. But it was really pretty cost effective. So files and disk section coming up. It's either Thursday or Friday. OK, so I did have it right. SMB 3.0, we talked about that support. Lots of OS APIs and libraries, tools, create, read, writes, .NET support for it. This is a new slide I made last summer. So I thought, this is what I really care about from an exam point. Why would I use one thing versus the other? Azure files versus blobs versus data disks. So if there's any mention about SMB, about sharing, Azure files is my answer. Right? If we're talking about disks, definitely blobs. Diagnostics, probably a blob. Azure data disks. So if we want to use lift ship applications, store data that's not required to be accessed from the outside, the virtual machine to which the disk is attached. So the only difference is a data disk is actually stored on a blob, but a data disk would be a disk that you add after you create the VM. So I create a VM, right? I get the OS disk and the temp disk, and then I can add an Azure data disk again, which would be stored as a page blob. When we have access to storage, we have these things called storage keys. You get two keys by default for a good reason, because if you have to change the key, you don't want to change the one key and you're locked out. So you change one key at a time. But also, if I want to share information with Mike down there, so if I wanted to give him temporary storage, I could actually give him a shared access storage key. It's a URI string, which is time-bound and limited, and then he could get access to that stuff I want to share with him. We can also group these things together and make policies out of them and to provide additional restrictions. We get five policies per container, queue, or table. Why do we regenerate keys? Why do I regenerate passwords? Same answer, security. Really good deep dive articles I don't know, you want to get too deep, but for real world, I mean, pretty much this right here, if you know and understand these, what they're for, you're probably good on this exam. But those links are like, Matt, there's two parts. There's so much information on there. Diagnostics, we can put retention policies, 1 to 365, 0 means no policy, logging levels, minimal verbosin off. When you do analyzing logs, they're saved in a dollar logs blog container in your storage account, and we can access them through a service API. SQL databases, so here's the operative word, the phrase that pays, the thing you want to make sure you know is right here. A DAC package versus a backpack package. So these are different scenarios, and here's my stupid little trick to remember it. Backpack is longer than DAC, so it contains more stuff. Right? Backpack is longer than DAC, it contains more stuff. So backpack contains both the schema and data. The DAC package just contains only the schema on there. Okay. So just know those terms, know that they're tied to SQL databases, know that they're used for importing and exporting the schema. Creating a backup vault. So we can do that for the backup files from any Windows server to Azure. You can use Azure Backup, pretty cool. Think like NT Backup, but for the cloud. It's a nice little service you can do. Backup restore data, you can do Server 2012 or 2008 R2. Anything else in here? Oh, there's actually a command line utility, which most people, if you don't do this, would never see this, but start OB recovery. That's the thing that's gotten me in exams before, like these little erroneous utilities that I just never seen or used, and just to know that that's real. So sometimes that's the way you can rule out questions, is they'll give you something like that, you know, it's not used for that, I know that. And that's really about all you need to know. Okay. And here's another one of those examples. This is the one that was in the back of my mind, I couldn't remember. This WAB installer, the first time I saw it, I'm like, well, who would call it a WAB installer? That's what it is. So requires WIF, Windows Identity Framework, and PowerShell. And the executable is WAB installer. It's used to do that. And again, you can go all the way back to Server 2012, not even R2, and 64-bit Windows 7 on up. So really good stuff to know. If you're going to tie it together with Data Protection Manager, you have to have Update Rollup 2 for SCDPM, System Center Data Protection Manager, Service Pack 1, and you have to select the agent type between Azure Backup Agent, Windows Server, and System Center Data Protection Manager, or Windows Server Essentials even. All right, we got 9 minutes and 20 slides. All right. Slide every 30 minutes. So we'll, again, leave these for you to review. I'll upload these tonight. So aka.ms/MarkGrimes, you'll be able to get these. Pretty flower. My favorite topic, I'm an identity guy, Azure Active Directory. So some things to know about here. Again, shortcut directly to aka.ms/Azure/AD. This you've probably seen if you've been in any identity sessions. It's kind of classic and true and tried. The main thing here is to know, so how many people use DirSync right now? Using DirSync, okay, that's old, you need to update. It's been around, no, but that's okay. So DirSync was replaced by Azure AD Sync, which has been updated by Azure AD Connect. Right, and Azure AD Connect, if you didn't know this, here's a cool thing I was talking to some other people here about, is that you actually can have two synchronization servers kind of working in tandem or as a failover. It's a new option. Yeah. Very cool options with that you want to check out. Also, when you get Azure AD Connect, you get Azure AD Health, which gives you diagnostics about your ADFS servers. Right? So a lot of good reasons, and there's a clear migration path to go to Azure AD Connect. But here's the point about this. So in the top part, we're looking at Azure synchronization with Azure AD Connect. It's a sync engine. It syncs a hash of the hash of the password. People freak out. I'm not syncing no passwords up there. Well, you're not. You're not even syncing the hash. It's a hash of the password, right? So it's very, very secure. And this is what most of our clients are doing. It's what they're recommending unless you have specific scenarios. Oh, I've got a bunch of federated apps on premise. I love and use ADFS. Okay, we can go with that. But if you don't, let's go the simpler solution. It's going to be that. Down here, I'm doing ADFS, which we now can deploy with Azure AD Connect, which will deploy both your ADFS and your web application proxy farms, right? Down here, so the key point is, where do I authenticate to? They're both called SSO, but SSO means two different things. The top is same sign-on, the bottom federation is single sign-on, which means you go back to the source of the truth, which is your on-premises Active Directory, or now in Server 2016, it could be an LDAP server, woohoo! That's cool, very excited about that one. But that won't be on the exam. So an Azure AD Connect will support LDAP as well. So that's the key point here. When and why would I choose one versus the other? If I got nothing else, I want quick, easy setup, don't require complex federation scenarios, let's do sync, otherwise let's do federation. Configuring the application access panel. If you haven't been in there, done that, my gosh. Well, if you have Azure set up, you can actually go to myapps.microsoft.com and there'll be something in there, whether they configured it for you or not. If you have your own trial account, do it, myapps.microsoft.com, and you can see what kind of things you can configure. Now they have, yay, Azure Active Directory preview in the new portal, finally, if you haven't seen that. So I don't have to go to the old portal anymore for Azure Active Directory. That probably won't be in the exam, but that just recently happened. So that's where you configure a lot of these things. So we have SaaS applications. We can leverage Azure Active Directory as the IDP, which stands for Identity Provider, right? As opposed to the SP, which is the Service Provider. All right, we're good. So Azure Active Directory determines how to authenticate, whether it's federated or standard, MFA, if you have MFA installed. I don't think they'll get in details in this exam, because that's a whole different console. I'm hoping they integrate that together, would be nice. Know the protocols, know thy protocols that we use and what are supported. SAMLP, Security Assertion Markup Language, OpenID Connect. what type of token do we typically use? It's called a JWT, JWT, JSON Web Token, right? So a lot of people see that and don't know what that is. In the application panel, we can configure and allow to add users groups. There's the link to it. Users, and once they have that, they can change password, reset, MFA preferences, account details, launch apps. They just changed it too, so they made a cool new groovy interface. You can have all your custom corporate apps in there. You can use marketplace apps, you can use your own apps, you can add them in there, and then they see little buttons and icons to launch those applications from that one place. Single sign-on right there. Lots of good stuff in there. Talked about authentication, more links for you. And there's a picture just kind of showing through an example of that other company out there that where you can add that in. You enable single sign-on, you enable automatic user provisioning to Google Apps, and then you assign users or groups to that application. That's exactly how it walks through. Integrating with Azure AD, we can do web apps, we can do WS Fed, SOAP clients, WS Trust specification, desktop ops, we can use OAuth. For RESTful HTTP methods, we like stateless is always a preferred approach. Graph API, you should be familiar with that. So that's how we programmatically access Azure Active Directory. Think CRUD operations, create, read, update, delete, stuff like that. RBAC, I think, did I mention? That was back in the resource group, but I think I talked a little bit about resource-based access control. Right, that's the rules that we can assign to things. And we can use Graph API to also do that. Here's some quick questions. Save those for the slide. Get you to the end here. We're getting close, folks. Virtual networks. Oh, big topic. You'll want to check out the network. There was a session yesterday on networks, and they show this slide. So when you think about virtual networks, this is really the big picture. How do we get in the front door? That's the left side. We have virtual networks. Once you create your network inside of Azure, we have multi-tier topology. I don't think this will be in the exam, but you should know about peering if you haven't heard about that. Cool new feature, right? So typically in VNets, like we said before, everything can talk to everything unless you do what? What are the two things I do to control traffic in a VNet? NSGs and UDRs. He's ready to go. All right. but now we can take a virtual network. Before, we had to make a VNet to VNet gateway, which was not too difficult but not too easy to make it happen, but now you can do peering, which is really simple because you do it in the portal, but peering probably won't be in the exam. Then you have hybrid connectivity, so that's the third option, and you should know what the options are there, and I'm gonna show you that in a slide coming up here real quick. Should be familiar with, if you never use Traffic Manager, think global DNS load balancing. So also note at the bottom here, actually I got a better picture. I updated these pictures here to show you some stuff here. So when we do this, we have the endpoints. We have three different types of endpoints, an Azure endpoint, an external endpoint. a nested, actually, no, I need to go back because I didn't get that point I wanted to highlight to you. This is the thing you need to know. So in the load balancing policies, make sure you know these. There are three ways I can do it. Performance-based, round robin, or failover. We can configure. Very important point. And then this was in, I just did this the other day because I hadn't been in the new portal and done this. So three types of endpoints, Azure and external, nested. Nested's really cool. So I could have Traffic Manager route to Europe, route to the United States, or let's say, no, the Americas. And then within the Americas, I could have a profile for America and South America, North America and South America, right? So it could say, you know, I could have it based on traffic or whatever. So I could route it, you know, so kind of nesting. I think you can do multiple levels in that as well. And then also, if you choose Azure Endpoint, this is something I noticed I thought was worthy. There's four different target resource types: cloud service, app service slot, or public IP address. So that's a new update for you there. Public IP address, now it's an object where it didn't used to be in cloud services. It was integrated and baked in and built in. You can use your own IP address, or you can let Azure DNS do the work for you. You can assign to the VM, ILBs, internet load balancers, VPN gateways, application gateways, dynamic or static, Windows or Linux, private IP address. Of course, the key rule of thumb is don't overlap your address scheme, right, with what you have on-premise into the cloud. And again, it can apply that to VMs, gateways, or application gateways, or ILBs, or NICs. Bring your own network. We talked about the 10.192.168.172.16 addresses. We talked about NSGs. We're good there. Internal load balancing. Actually, we talked about internal load balancing. You do multi-tier applications with internal facing. So typically, you know, from a design standpoint, we have a public ILB on the outside. Then as we go down our tiers, then we have ILBs with internal private IP address. Multiple NICs, so why would I do that? Virtual appliance, typical reason, answer. The MAC IP address persists through the VM lifecycle, and now we actually know it's really persistent because they just announced that at the kickoff there. We can separate front-end and back-end traffic and the data planes by the IP addressing and the multiple NICs. Static IP, so we talked about that. Again, try to throw in some sample PowerShell commands to get familiar with seeing those, because again, you'll probably see something somewhere on some topic. I can't tell you what they are, but that's just an example of how it would work to do that, and I got some PowerShell examples in there. Go in there and make an ILB, right? Just fire one up. Got 1 minute. Okay, we're almost there. Oh, that's my alarm there. Stop. Okay, we're almost there, folks. Hang on. Modifying a subnet, so once I make a VNet, I can have subnets within it. Then I can click the little Add Subnet button, or I can do it with PowerShell, Azure CLI, or REST API, and add additional subnets in there. Import network configuration, that's actually an old picture, but I just updated it. Also, I forgot to take away the old picture. This is what I was talking about before. With anything you create, now you get this automation script. There's the ARM template. I can take that. I can modify. Here's another one, another freebie you probably don't know about. Remember the N and the B? Right, when you click B, type template deployment. Anyone use that? No one. Template deployment, yeah, very good. You grab this, paste it in there, boom, you can test it out. It's the coolest little thing. Try that out. Three things for the real world. B, N, and the template deployment button. It's really cool. But this is where you see it. I can then take that out, and I can import it into that template deployment and remodify the whole network. Much, much easier than the XML files before. Okay. Appliances, bring in appliances. This is just in the marketplace. Lots of appliances you can select from. Gateway enhancements, so high-performance gateways for site-to-site tunnels. And I'm going to talk more about that in the next section. So these are the questions for review, and I just want to get to a couple real quick review things to let you know about, and I'll be done. So the objectives were, I basically built this slide deck, folks, if you don't know, by the exam objectives. Each one, I broke down sections to give you some tips and tricks, so hopefully that helps. I'll get this deck uploaded for you at the end of the day. There's a lot of breakout sessions on CERT, so I put the ones I thought were most relevant down here at the bottom. These are the hands-on workshops that are all, if it says Azure, just jump in there. You can do anything you want, and clickety-click. You don't have to follow the script, right? You've never done Traffic Manager? Fire one up. Take a look at all the options you can configure in it. And folks, there we go. So hopefully you learned a couple trips. I mean, I got you 3 to 5 questions I did in my job. You got some tips about taking the exam. You got a deck I will provide to you. If it's not on their site, it will be on my site at the end of today. And I wish you a lot of great luck, and have a great Ignite this year. Thank you.